Welcome to the Normal Birth Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Whipple. On today's episode, you'll meet Jackie S., mom of two. Jackie was unexpectedly diagnosed with premature ovarian failure in her early 20s, which made it impossible for her to conceive naturally. Her desire to birth her own children led her to seek an egg donor, and she carried out two successful pregnancies. Jackie's story includes some amazing details, but also familiar stories of faith, grief, and love. I'm grateful to share her stories of normal birth.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah. So it's been a little while since we've talked, and I'll be honest, I know a little bit about your story, but not too much. Can you give me a digest before we get started?
Oh, wow. Okay. Whew. It's a tough one to digest or to make into really short form. So you want to know about the conception side of my story? Is that where you'd like me to start?
That would be great, I think, because that is a big, strong point about your story, I think.
Absolutely. So would you like me to start from just finding out that I could not have children? Is that a good place for me to start?
Yeah, if that's where you want to start, that's great.
Sure. Yeah. So not long after my husband and I got married in 2014, we were very much ready to start a family quickly. I think it was about 6 months into marriage. We had been dating for several years. So definitely ready to start a family and excited about the possibilities. And then, like a lot of women, things didn't happen quickly. You know, a couple months went by and I'm thinking, you know, I should be pregnant by now after a month, which, you know, that's silly to think because you just never know. So decide to go check in with the OBGYN and get some blood work and just see how things are going, because also, like a lot of women, I had been on birth control for so long.
Yeah.
And so didn't really know, you know, what kind of effects that could have on my fertility, et cetera, et cetera. So definitely wanted to kind of get a baseline of where things were, and why after a couple months, which a couple months again is not that long, but you know, when things are moving quickly, or you know, after a month or so, you want to know what's going on. So went in and got some blood work, and unfortunately it was, I remember it being a Monday morning at 8 a.m and I got a phone call about my blood work, and I was at work and I was herding a bunch of kids. I worked at a local community college, and I was herding some kids from like high school age, middle school age. We were doing a summer camp at the college. I was getting them on a bus, and I got a phone call from the office, which probably wasn't a great time to call me and tell me this news, nor should it probably been told over the phone. But they said, hey, we got some concerning blood work. You're very young for the results that we received, and it shows that you don't have ovarian function. And it actually, the numbers indicate that you have already gone through menopause. So that's quite shocking at 8 a.m. on a Monday morning when you're trying to work. So I definitely was taken aback and had to step away from the bus of kids for a minute before we left.
Yeah.
We were going to the Corvette Museum in Bowling Green, Kentucky. That's where we're headed.
When you get news like that.
Yes. So I immediately called my husband and my mom. Those are my first two that I call, and was just beside myself. And they were in shock. Honestly, like I am now, like at a loss for words, just didn't even know what to think. Whenever they called me, I didn't even know what questions to ask. I was like, okay. So I got myself together and took some deep breaths, talked to husband, talked to mom, and then my coworkers were very understanding. But I did go through with the field trip with the kids,
because
I was like, you know what? I need that distraction today. I need to do this, and we'll figure this out later.
Yeah.
So after that, I'm very much like hit the ground running kind of gal. Like I want to know, you know, what's next? What does this mean? What do I need to be doing
yeah.
to conceive or to make myself be able to conceive, or what does it all mean? You know,
yeah.
I'm a research gal. Like, I immediately go into like research mode. And so I think I don't remember exactly. I think what ended up happening is my OBGYN actually called me maybe later that day. I wanted to like talk to her. And she said, the best thing for you to do is we need to connect you with a reproductive endocrinologist.
Okay.
So that's, oh, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Your video froze a little bit, but I can still hear you just fine.
Where do we leave off? Oh no.
I heard endocrinologist last, okay, and then perfect. You asked, are you there? Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so she hooked me up with a reproductive endocrinologist out of Nashville.
Okay.
And met with them and got a better understanding of what my diagnosis was, which is premature ovarian failure.
Okay.
So that's just the loss of normal function of your ovaries at an early age.
Okay.
So it's postmenopausal. All numbers indicate that. I was, 26 years old at the time.
Okay. Yeah. That's pretty young.
Yeah. So you're very shocked and confused, and you just don't even understand what it all means. And I mean, from there, they basically told me, like, you are likely never going to conceive on your own. That's just not a possibility, especially with the number. They took like AMH and FSH blood work. So it's like follicle count and.
Oh, okay.
And hormone numbers. I can't remember all the full names of them. I know follicle stimulating hormone is one, but it indicated, you know, that it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen for you. So from there, they talked about obviously adoption being, I mean, that's a great option that I had thought about before, just like, you know, before even trying to conceive, it was something that I had thought about, but didn't know a ton about adoption. But then the reproductive endocrinologist also mentioned that I could use an egg donor. And I was like, what does that even mean? I'd never heard of such a thing.
Ever. Yeah.
It's not something that was on my radar. So they told me basically, you know, we can get an egg from a healthy, fertile, you know, woman and combine it with your husband's sperm and we can create embryos and you can carry the baby. And I was like, wow, that is wild. That is so wild. I mean, that's a possibility. So my husband and I talked about adoption and what that would look like and talked about this new option that we'd never heard of and what that might look like as well, and prayed a lot about it. And we ended up deciding that the egg donor route was something that we really wanted to pursue. And then from there, it's a whole like new world. I mean, it's a whole crazy world to go through, because you are thinking about a woman, like half of your child's genetics is going to be from this woman, right?
This other person. Yeah.
Yes. And so it feels like when you're in it, when you're in infertility or get this kind of shocking news, it is you do go through a dark place where you're like, why in the world is this happening? What is this going to look like? So it was at first very jarring to think that another woman, it felt like it was like a replacement almost in the moment, you know? Yeah. So you're like, wow, this other woman is like replacing me. And that's how you feel when you're in that place of you haven't maybe accepted this route, or, you know, you're just still mourning the loss of being able to conceive with your own genetics.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you made that choice fairly quickly afterwards. So I can only imagine.
We did. We did make that choice pretty quickly. Just, to be able to carry a child just is such a sacred thing to me and something that I really wanted to experience. And then to be able to, you know, my husband to be able to pass on his genetics. I mean, what a amazing thing, you know, for both of us. So once I, you know, prayed a lot about it and was able to accept the route. And I mean, I was very excited about the possibility of being able to carry a child and be a mother. And so from there, we were told you can ask somebody to be an egg donor, and, you know, like ask a family member, or do you have a sister, which I do not. Or there are women that are willing to do it that sign up with agencies, mm-hmm. like with even the fertility doctor's office has women that sign up with them. And there's also like egg donor agencies. And so that was a whole world that I was obviously not in tune with. And so I started doing a lot of research, and it's very odd at first when you're looking through, I mean, you're literally looking through profiles mm-hmm. of women that are willing to donate. And yeah, I often say that it feels like a dating site, because you're sitting here looking at like their stats and like what their interests are and their education level. And their it's very odd at first. And whenever I was kind of scrolling through those, I did feel like, you know, I really wanted somebody that I know, somebody that I can have a relationship and that my children can have a relationship with should they choose to one day. Yeah. So that really was placed on my heart. That was very important for me to do that. And same with my husband, he agreed with it. And actually, I don't say this a whole lot, but I actually asked a cousin first.
Okay.
And that did not work out. I mean, that would have been a great route, but due to just blood work not being great, just fertility, their own fertility not being great at the time, mm-hmm. it wasn't a great option for success. Okay. You see what I'm saying? Like if we're going to go that route, it might have not have been successful.
Yeah.
So the doctor recommended that we go with someone maybe a little younger mm-hmm. or that has a little bit better fertility.
Okay.
So then I was scrolling through Facebook one night and my husband was laying next to me in bed and he's asleep. He's snoozing away. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, you know, still like, what's my future look like as a mother? Like, what is it going to be? Who's going to be the egg donor? Is it going to work out? Are we going to find somebody? And this girl that I know, and I mean, not well, but I knew in my sorority at Western, she was much younger than me, but whenever I was getting my master's, I would travel back and forth and also help with the sorority, like after I'd already graduated. So that's how I knew who she was. She was an acquaintance. I had ran into her a few times, but I saw her and something just came over me. It was like, man, she would be perfect. Cause we kind of share similar features, which isn't all that was important to me, but she's very, like, she seems like a free spirit. She's a Christian. She seemed very kind and loving and would be a neat, like, a part of the family to me, just somebody that I could have a relationship with. And so I just happened to send her a Facebook message. I am not shy, Megan. Yeah. I'm not shy. I'm not afraid to say, you know, give somebody a compliment or, you know, ask somebody a question. I'm not shy at all. So I messaged her and just told her that this was going to be the weirdest compliment that she would ever receive. And I basically just said, I kind of gave her like a brief history of what we were going through mm-hmm. and that it would take an egg donor. And I said, if you were on these egg donor sites, I would pick you. And I could not believe her response. Her response was, well, actually, I was considering becoming an egg donor because I have a friend that is going through infertility. I've learned a lot about it. And so she said, I was considering signing up to be an egg donor because I just recently learned about it. So she said, if you would like me to be your egg donor, I would do that for you. And I will not, you know, sign up on those sites. And I will work with you instead. And I was like, you're kidding.
I mean, and it's so awesome. I have all of these messages still on Facebook Messenger, and it's really fun to look back at them and just, it's just crazy that as fate would have it, that she was like, yeah, sure, let's do this. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I cannot believe it. I need to look back and see how quickly from when I messaged her to when I had my daughter. I mean, it's just, it seemed like it was pretty fast, but it was just, it was fate. I mean, I don't know. It was a God thing to me that I see her and something just comes over me, message her. She says, yes. I mean, it was like all in about 10 minutes.
That is incredible.
It is. It is incredible. And I'm just so thankful to her. I mean, and she's such an important part of our family now. I mean, yeah. It's just the best. It's the best because my kids have more people to love them.
Yeah. That is awesome.
It is. It is really awesome.
So tell me about, I mean, once you decide to go that route, you've mm-hmm. got a potential donor. I assume there's an IVF type situation. How does that work?
So from there, after talking with her, we decided to obviously, we wanted to talk on the phone mm-hmm. and kind of get a feel for each other. Cause I mean, I'm not sure about her, but I wanted to know who she was more so. Yes. I had ran into her a few times at sorority events that I helped at, but mm-hmm. I did not know her on a personal level.
Okay.
More of a, so I really wanted to get to know her. She wanted to get to know me. I'm sure. And we became fast friends and just really hit it off. I mean, I feel like she's my sister. I mean, immediately. And so then I asked her if she would be willing to travel to Evansville, mm-hmm. Indiana, which is where I was working with a doctor there. And so she was willing to come there, and we went to the doctor's office, and I think she actually did a little bit of blood work in her city where she lives.
Okay.
Hours away. So I think she did a little bit of blood work there initially. And then when that seemed like it was good, mm-hmm. then she came at me Evansville, and we had lunch, and we went to the doctor's office, and just, I mean, became best buddies right away. She was a blessing. I'm just so grateful to her. I just wanted to like give her a big old hug. And yes, we did end up having to do IVF and mm-hmm. egg retrievals. And then it went very smoothly, honestly, from there. Yeah. It very smoothly. We ended up, the first go around, we put in one, unfortunately, after I did get some positive pregnancy tests mm-hmm. very early on, and then they quickly started to fade just after a few days.
Yeah.
That was very disheartening and felt like, oh, this is never going to happen for us. You know, this route wasn't the right route to go, and it's not meant to be. And so then we were definitely ready for it to happen. So we right away, let's try again. So tried again the second time, the same thing happened, sadly. So we were just so discouraged. And then again, the third time. And now we didn't have to do egg retrievals all this mm-hmm. time. We had embryos. We were very blessed, several embryos to try with. So third time we decided to put in two and, you know, potentially have twins. Honestly, they could split into more. You could have four technically, but sadly lost one early on. But then we were blessed with our daughter, who is now 4 and a half, Channing. And my goodness, that was just it was such a blessing. And it's just such a it's a crazy wait. Whenever when you do a embryo transfer, you have what's called a 2 week wait.
Yeah.
And it is the hardest 2 weeks of your life. Mm-hmm. It is very challenging. I always test at home. Women do not. Some women wait that full 2 weeks to go in and get blood work and see if they have a positive or not. I cannot do that. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I cannot do that. I had to know. I had to know what I was working with potentially. Like, is it looking good or is it not looking good at all?
Yeah.
And I just don't like to wait for disappointment. I just want to go ahead and start the mourning process. Cause I'd already been through those two transfers,
yeah,
you know, and had losses. And so I was like, you know, I need to know if things are happening. So this time the lines were progressing continually, okay, you know, the whole 2 weeks. And I was just like, oh my goodness, is this it? Oh, so went in for blood work. My number was like insanely high, which I thought maybe meant like both took.
Yeah.
Both took, which I think they say like that number doesn't always indicate that. I'm not really sure, but I ended up blessed with one.
Okay.
And so, yeah, third time was a charm for us.
That's awesome. So tell me about what was prenatal care like for you?
Prenatal care?
Yes. One? Yeah. Did you get like, I mean, clearly you were in your doctor's office from the very start. So was there any special routine or anything that they need to do with that to make sure that everything is progressing? Or is it a standard situation where you come in every few weeks or so and maybe get a couple ultrasounds?
Yeah, unfortunately it wasn't standard. It takes a lot for me to maintain a pregnancy. Okay. And I think unfortunately with the first two, I think what happened was my lining wasn't getting thick enough, and you have to have a thick lining, yeah, to sustain a pregnancy, obviously. And I don't think the first two times they got my lining thick enough. And mm-hmm. I mean, it's unfortunately it's a process of learning like what's your body gonna do, and you know, can it carry a pregnancy? So third time it actually got postponed. My transfer got postponed because my lining was not thickening up the third time as much as they wanted. So they kept having to give me more like estrogen and give it to me different ways, and finally got it thick enough. And that's when, you know, we were successful and had our sweet little girl. Yeah. So I also had to take shots in my hip or butt area for the first 10 weeks, progesterone shots. And my husband had to give me those every night, and they're not comfy cozy.
As no.
I also had to take heparin, a blood thinner, in my stomach twice a day. So yeah, three needles a day for at least 10 weeks, and then two needles a day for the entirety of my pregnancy.
That's
so
brutal.
It's a lot, worth every stick for sure.
Yeah.
And then I also took medicine and prenatal vitamins,
yeah,
and you know, things, aspirin, that kind of thing. But yeah, the shots get to the point where it just didn't even faze me. It's just a part of it.
Just routine.
It's just part of it. It's not awesome. And I mean, it's very, very difficult, but it becomes part of the routine, and it's also worth it, you know, to get to your miracle.
Yeah. So did you have any other challenges or maybe really great things about the pregnancy? Any type of like morning sickness or, you know, ligament pains, things like that?
Yeah. My first pregnancy with my 4.5-year-old, I did end up having a subchorionic hemorrhage.
Okay.
From week 7 to 11. And that is, I guess, where you have like some blood fill in your uterus, and it ends up like, I don't know, usually it resolves on its own. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be fatal to the pregnancy. I was very blessed that it resolved on its own. It was small. So that was scary because I wasn't familiar with that, but it ended up fine. She was good and healthy. And honestly, for my first pregnancy, I was one of those annoying women that was just like, ah, I feel amazing. I can eat everything.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes, that's how I was. With my first pregnancy, I was very thankful for that. I felt great, other than, you know, a little bit of heartburn with certain foods. Mm-hmm. And then that 7 to 11 weeks where I was kind of unsure of how things were going to go with that fridge. But otherwise, I felt really, really amazing. Now, my second pregnancy, no, it was awful, terrible. Felt sick. From 5 weeks to delivery, sick as a dog. I'm telling you, I am questioning having a third because I was so sick. Oh my gosh, I was so sick. It's just amazing how different a pregnancy can be, you know, because from one, I was blissful and I felt amazing. And the next, I was sick as a dog.
Did you happen to have the experience? I know a lot of women who are really, really sick will actually wind up losing weight through a part of the pregnancy. Did that happen to you?
You know, I really didn't lose weight. No, okay. But I could not eat a whole lot. There was certain things I could eat, but they weren't necessarily healthy things. So I ate a ton of peanut butter, I could eat peanut butter and I would put it on like English muffins or, I could not eat meat. That was it. I don't even remember what else I could eat. It was like bread. I mean, that's carbs. So yeah. I really losing weight per se. But I think I gained probably honestly about the same as I did with the first.
Okay.
Because peanut butter.
It's so funny, especially like looking at all these like social media influencers and they're like, look at this healthy spread that I made. And there's like avocados and blueberries. And I'm like, you eat what you can keep down.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
You do the best you can. And sometimes that's any food.
Yes. And yeah. I never did understand the food aversion thing, because with my first pregnancy, I did not have that. I did not experience that. I've never experienced that in life. So I was always like, how can you not like what you've always liked? I don't understand it. And then with the second, I was like, get chicken away from me. Like, don't even cook it. Like, I don't want meat. Like, I was a vegetarian while I was pregnant with my second one. I mean, I could not smell meat. I couldn't look at it. It's a wild thing what your hormones can do to you.
Yeah. So how old is your youngest?
So my youngest is one.
It's one. Okay. So you're still pretty kind of close on that. You haven't had a chance to really forget.
Correct. So yeah. My second one. Yes. So, probably the best thing, about my pregnancy with my second one is I was more educated about, what I wanted to do with my delivery. With my first one, I was totally aloof. C-section, not vaginal, whatever happens. Did not know or care because I wasn't familiar with either. So unfortunately my first one was frank breech. So she was like folded in half, you know, breech, and was up until a week before they checked me. And she was still breech. And so they felt like a C-section was the best option. Looking back, I feel like I wish I would have waited longer, and I wish I would have tried, you know, to push back a little bit, you know, and I think I could have gone over. I could have gone over, you know, a week. I don't think that I needed to deliver a week ahead of time. I think she could have turned. Could have turned, you know, a week after, but that it is what it is. I didn't know any better. I didn't know to ask questions. I didn't know to press. But with my second one, I was adamant that I wanted a VBAC. I was going to do everything in my power to get my VBAC. And I did everything that I could, knowing that it still could end in a C-section if they're in an emergency situation, excuse me. But I did everything I could. I hired a doula. I had a midwife. I educated myself, did exercises, bouncing on balls, whatever it was. And I was very blessed to be able to get that VBAC.
That is awesome.
So let's see. I had a really challenging recovery with my C-section.
Okay.
Maybe it's low pain tolerance. Or the fact that you have a major surgery and then you're taking care of a human being after that could be it too. But I think that the pain that I went through, I mean, I felt like I couldn't walk for, you know, a week, and I'm trying to care for and bond with a newborn. I'm a new mom, never had a baby before. So I'm just overwhelmed and all the things.
So I really did not want to repeat that again. I did not want to have a major surgery and then take care of two children.
Yeah.
You know, second go around. So I wanted to do everything in my power to get that V back, knowing that, hey, this could be also painful. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, vaginal births are also very painful, and there's things that can happen during those as well. So I knew all the potential possibilities, and I did everything I could to educate myself on how to get my V back. So yeah. I did hire a doula, and that was so wonderful. And I encourage all women to do that can do that. It's so wonderful to feel empowered with information, you know, just having knowledge to, you know, what might come up in the hospital that might potentially push you into a C-section that's not necessary or whatever yeah. it may be. And then whenever I was 32 weeks along, I actually switched providers.
Okay.
To get, yeah.
So what prompted that?
Well, absolutely. My previous provider was wonderful. Her practice was wonderful. Just an amazing human. I respect her so much. She delivered my baby safely, you know, via C-section first go around. However, I was very passionate about getting a V-back. I do feel like she maybe wasn't as comfortable with my request to, like, I want to go over a week.
Okay.
I want to go over my due date. I want to try, you know, as long as everyone's safe, that's number one, is getting baby here safe. Yeah. Always. But I was willing to go over my due date and push the boundaries, I guess, a little bit. And I just felt some hesitation there. Yeah. I felt like she was a little uncomfortable with that. And I understand that and respect that. Mm-hmm. So I did feel like it was best for me to switch practices, because I did know of another practice. She's actually a midwife. I knew that she was more comfortable with that.
Okay.
She definitely advocates for that and will do everything in her power to help you get your V back. Within reason, ensuring that everyone is safe. So that was the best possible decision I could have ever made. Awesome. It did hurt my heart. Like I actually cried when I left my other practice, because I felt bad, honestly.
Yeah.
I felt so terrible. I felt so terrible because she's just wonderful. She's a very brilliant mind. I just felt like I needed to go a different route.
Yeah.
So yeah, I still to this day feel very guilty about that. And I hope that she doesn't take it personally. And who knows if she even noticed. I'm sure she probably did, because I was 32 weeks along and not coming in. But yeah, I hope she didn't take it personally. But I would say most people probably take it personally. But anyway, so I did switch practices, and it was wonderful. My midwife gave me so much information about what I should be doing to get my V back.
Okay.
With my prior provider, I wasn't really getting any information. Mm-hmm. It was just like, whatever happens, happens, you know, let us know if your water breaks, you know, that kind of thing. I really needed information. I needed, like, what do I need to do? Now the doula was also that for me, but I also wanted my provider to give me some more information, to do to get my V back and to be supportive. Like, I wanted to feel very supported, not like, I'm not going to let you go past a week over your due date. I don't like that. Like, just very, I wanted, like, we're going to do what we can to make it happen, you know, and within reason. So it went wonderfully. And I actually had, like, what you see in the movies where your water breaks at home, which I know is unusual. I mean, that's not, it's more rare for that to happen, you know? So it was a really cool experience to be able to have my water break in the middle of the night and just be like, panic.
Like, I guess this is it.
Yeah. But anyway, I was able to get my V back, and I'm just, I'm so thankful for that, because recovery for me personally was night and day difference.
Yeah. Tell me more about, you said your water broke at home, you were in bed. At that point, had you had any contractions or any other indications that labor might be ready to start?
No, I really didn't have any, yeah, any indications at all. Was having the, I guess, Braxton Hicks, like the tightening, but yeah, no tightening. And it was, it was, my due date was Cinco de Mayo, May 5th of last year. And it was May 1st or so that I had gone in to see my, yeah, midwife. And I maybe was effaced like a little bit, but not, no dilation. Mm-hmm. And so I was getting concerned about, yeah, like the potential of, you know, either having to maybe induce, which I know there's some risk, mm-hmm, to that with being a VBAC, yeah, candidate. And I was also just afraid of the fact of, if I don't go into labor, are they going to automatically think I need a C-section or whatever? So, mm-hmm, I asked my midwife for some suggestions on what are some things that I can do to maybe kickstart labor. And so, like pumping, I was told to pump, mm-hmm, nipple stimulation, yeah, raspberry leaf tea.
Yeah, that's, yeah, a big one. Yeah.
Drink that. Primrose oil.
Primrose oil. Yep. Topical application.
Topical application.
Yeah.
And honestly, I did all those things.
Okay.
And I mean, within a couple of days. So May 2nd, mm-hmm, I went into labor at 1 a.m. in the morning. I was laying in bed, woke up, felt like I needed to pee-ish. And, you know, it's just, it was water everywhere. And then, you know, I stood up and
just water gushes
absolutely everywhere. So I immediately texted my doula. Oh, I got my husband up, but I texted my doula and was like, what do I do? I forgot everything you told me. No, I do remember, like, she's like, you got to look at the color and all, you know, the amount, yeah, odor, all the stuff, and everything was normal and fine. And I labored at home for 15 hours.
Okay.
And waited. I wanted to wait as long as I could to go to the hospital, because I just wasn't sure how far along I was, like if I was progressing, yeah, well. I just didn't want any, like, as much early intervention. So I waited as long as I could until I was like, I just wanted to get settled there. Like after, yeah, after being home, my water broke at 1 a.m. We went to the hospital at 5 p.m.
Okay.
That day. So I was in a lot of pain. Contractions started about, mm-hmm, an hour after my water broke, when I started to feel the real deal.
Okay. So what were you doing for that time at home? Were you moving around a lot, using a ball, anything like that?
You mean like my whole time I labored at home?
Yeah.
I think I tried bouncing on the ball. I was in so much pain though. Like I didn't want to be on the ball. Mm-hmm. I remember the ball. I knew, like, my doula and midwife both, I mean, the ball's like big thing, like to, yeah, but it was like so irritating to me. I remember I was like, I don't want the dang ball. I just honestly wanted to, like, every time a contraction came, I just wanted to, like, hang on to my husband. Like, I just, mm-hmm, wanted to stand and, like, hang on to his hands, or like I would sit on the couch and just, like, try to breathe through it. And man, it was tough.
Yeah.
Very, very painful. I did not know what to expect, for sure. Nobody can, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was rough. They, closer to 4 p.m. or so, they were not super consistent, but they, mm-hmm, I mean, it would maybe be 5 minutes here, 3 minutes here, then it would be like 8 minutes. So I was very confused,
yeah,
by the inconsistency, but still very painful.
Yeah.
I mean, so by 5 p.m. I was getting antsy.
Yeah.
I think I wish I would have waited a little bit longer, but I was getting pretty antsy and just kind of wanted to get settled. Honestly, mm-hmm, I just wanted to get there and get settled,
get checked. What's next? You know, yeah. I was just kind of getting tired of being home and not knowing for sure what's going on, you know? Yeah. So finally we went ahead and went in, and when they checked me, I was 4 centimeters dilated. So I wasn't okay. super far along. I was pretty disappointed, honestly. I was hoping I was further along than that.
Well, it sounds like you were having a lot of intensity. And so I can imagine you would assume it would be somewhere in the 5-6 at least area.
Yes. Yeah. I was hoping for that. And so I was pretty disappointed when, you know, whenever he said, you're 4 centimeters. I'm like, are you kidding me? We got a ways to go here. So they did obviously check me in, and mm-hmm. and I was in a lot of pain, and I was exhausted, just mm-hmm. so tired. And I, from the beginning, had always said I would get an epidural. I think that women that don't get epidurals are heroes. I mean, they are super women. I cannot even imagine. So there was never a time that I said, oh, I don't want any medication. Mm-hmm. My goal was to hold off as long as I could.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I ended up getting to 5 or 6 centimeters. And mm-hmm. then I was like, I'm done. I've had enough, but I need a break. I'm exhausted. I've been up since 1 a.m. No sleep. How am I going to get through labor? Like, I have no idea. So they agreed. They'd never pushed or asked. They said, do you want us to ask? Do you not? I had the mm-hmm. best nurse ever.
Awesome.
That did not try to push anything. And I told her, bring it on. But they ended up giving me low dose Pitocin.
Okay.
To try to help things progress. Mm-hmm. I did get to rest a little bit, but you know how that is. You got beeping, you got people coming in to check
coming
you.
In and out. And
it's not rest.
Yeah.
It's not rest. So I got to sleep for a couple hours, and it did take, I think it ended up taking about 5 or 6 hours to get me to 10 okay. centimeters. Yeah. It took a while. And so, I tried to rest the best I could, and then finally started pushing, and I ended up pushing for 4 hours.
Oh goodness.
I was so tired.
Yeah.
My body was just too tired. I was too tired to push. I did not rest. I had been up so long. So I pushed for 4 hours. It was very, very difficult. And looking back, I'm like, man, I could do better now. Like, I need another try at this, because yeah. I feel like I could do better now. But before you have that experience, you don't really know how to push. Like,
no.
You can be told, and you know, and your doula can give you all the information, but mm-hmm. until you get in there, you do not know what it feels like to push.
Right.
So it took me a while to understand like what I needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like it probably took me an hour or so, like, for them to be like, that's it. Like, that's how you need to push.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. And yeah. then also, when you have an epidural, yes, you're not feeling as much, but you do feel, and my epidural obviously wore off during a 4-hour push
yes.
time frame. And so they did have to come in. I was like, help. Oh man.
Give you a little,
I'm feeling everything. So I do look back now, and I'm like, now I understand what it takes to push.
Yeah.
But my body was too tired.
Yeah.
I was burnt out. I was so exhausted. I could not push anymore. So I did have to have some intervention. I had to, the OB, actually a dear friend of mine came in, and I did get an episiotomy, and they used the vacuum. But honestly, my daughter was a champ the entire time. Like, the entire 4 hours that I pushed, she was never in distress.
Not awesome.
One. Otherwise, they probably would have had to do something. But
yeah,
never once were they concerned about her. And she sat in that birth canal for 4 hours, or maybe, you know, 3 hours. And she did great. She was just calm, cool, and collected, unlike me. So I was so thrilled for that, because that's scary, you know. But yeah, they did have to come in and help. And I was, at that point, I was saying, like, get her out of me. Yeah. Help me.
Done. Help. Tapping you out.
Know? Yes. I was like, help. And my husband, he was so wonderful and sweet. He was right next to me, obviously cheering me on. But a couple of times he was saying, "You're almost there, you're almost there." And I'm like, "No, I'm not. No, I'm not almost there. Like, don't quit saying that." Because I just knew that, like, my midwife wasn't saying anything like that. Yeah. Like, you know, she wasn't saying anything that indicated I was almost there. So I knew I wasn't. And bless him, he was trying so hard. But I was like, "I'm not there." So, and they kept asking, like, "Do you want to feel her head? Do you want a mirror?" And I'm like, "No, I don't want any of that. I'm tired. I just want her out of me."
So, what I want is for this not to be happening anymore.
Yes, I am done with this process. But I was so thrilled to get the help. Now, at the time, like after having to have some assistance, mm-hmm. I was very disappointed in myself. I felt like I didn't. I felt like I failed. Like I couldn't do it on my own. I was too tired. I'm not strong enough. So I was really hard on myself for a while, you know, feeling like I couldn't do it on my own. But, and I beat myself up for a long time over it, but now I'm like, no, I did do it. Like I did get my V back, and yes, I did have to have some assistance, and that's okay. It's okay.
Yeah. So. That's, it sounds like you worked really hard at it.
I did. I worked did so it. Hard. I did work hard. Oh.
So you finally have this delivery. Did you get the golden hour experience?
Yes. Yes, we did. Now I did get to have her on my chest immediately. They did have to take her briefly because she was maybe having a little bit of breathing trouble. Very brief. They took her really quickly and they got her good. It was a moment of like, is she okay? But got her back and just got to enjoy her and just cry and be so thankful that I got my V back. And it was just an awesome bonding experience with her. Like, we did it. And you were so chill. So it was wonderful for sure.
How was that in contrast to your C-section?
So my C-section was still like, a really cool experience. It really was to be in that operating room. And again, my OB at the time, she's awesome. She like commanded the room and, you know, she got her out safely and took care of me and she was wonderful. And then being able to, I mean, I got my daughter, you know, pretty much right away after as well and got to start breastfeeding. So it was still an amazing bonding experience. First time mom and got to carry her. And I mean, it was still wonderful. It was just different. They're both completely different experiences, but both wonderful.
That's awesome. So after labor, did your husband cut the cord?
Yes.
Yes.
He did get to cut the cord with Channing, my first. Now, mm-hmm. I don't recall with the second one if he did or not. I don't remember. I don't remember that one.
You said you had a lot of pain with the C-section. What was your healing period like after the VBAC?
So I think just the most challenging thing was, you know, the pain along with trying to bond with a baby, like trying to care for a baby while you're like reeling over in pain and not able to get up. And I think that was the most challenging part to me. And I do remember like it was 5 days, like day five is when I was like, okay, I'm feeling a little better. Like I can actually stand up straight. You know, when you have like that C-section cut, you're like, you feel like you have to like hunch over and walk hunched over, can't walk upstairs. But I do remember it took me to day five. I was like, okay, I'm feeling a little bit better. I can stand up. But, you know, it did take several weeks to feel completely healed, you know, and better. But with the VBAC, I felt amazing and almost immediately after. I felt wonderful.
Awesome.
So, it was just great. I mean, I did. Yes, obviously, episiotomy, not comfortable at all. But compared to my C-section, I just felt like I can get up, I can walk. Mm-hmm. I feel alert, like I can hold her. I can get up and walk. I mean, obviously, it took the epidural wearing off, but I felt like I could get up and move, you know, and it was just completely different.
Man, that's wonderful. So did you talk to your doula at all or any of your other caregivers after the birth and kind of get feedback from them about what they noticed?
Yes, I did. I talked to my doula after she wanted to hear about the whole experience, because I didn't have her. I could have, I had the option of having her in the room with me, but mm-hmm. I chose not to. I think in the future I would probably have her. Yeah. I think that would be valuable, but I just didn't know either way if I wanted that. But I did talk to her, and she was reassuring that, you know, everything happened wonderfully, and she was proud of me, because I did tell her I was beating myself up, but she said, "You're tired. I mean, you powered through and you did awesome." So it was nice to get to talk to her and like relive my birth story to her and get to talk it out with her. I thought that was really valuable. And then I talked to my midwife also, and I said, you know, what happened? And she was like, "You were exhausted, Jackie. Yeah. You did amazing. You were just very, very tired from laboring for 33 hours. And I was like, "Okay, I get it." So it was nice to talk to them about it afterwards.
That's great. Did you have anyone else to talk to after the fact? Any kind of professional needs or anything like that, or close friends that you relied on and talked to?
I mean, my husband, because he was there, it was nice to like talk about the experience again with him. Mm-hmm. And I definitely talked to my mom and told her everything. And then as far as friends, I mean, honestly, my doula was that for me. I felt like she was the most valuable person to be able to talk to about that. But definitely talk to my friends, because all of them knew that I was going for that VBAC, and they wanted to know, like, did it happen?
How'd it go?
Like, they were actually kind of worried to ask me, because they're afraid if I did have a C-section that I would be like sad to say that, you know. But no, that everybody was like, "How'd it go?" That's kind of how they asked. And so everybody was interested to know, and I was very excited to be able to tell everybody I did it.
That's awesome. I'm so excited for you. That is a really long labor.
It was.
Yeah. So your youngest is about a year old now. How are you doing now? What, any kind of lasting effects or special memories that you have about that time?
I'm doing really well, other than exhaustion right now.
Yeah.
So the first 4 months of Sylvia's life, she slept through the night. Aside from like the first 2 weeks where you need to like wake them every couple hours to feed, but she slept through the night, no problem. After 4 months, that did not happen anymore. And it still has continued not to. And I will say, a lot of it has to do with, I have a 4.5-year-old who's in school and brings sickness home. We've been sick for, I mean, she was sick for 6-8 months of her life. I mean, so you get colds, you get all the things, you're not going to sleep well. So that's contributed a lot to the lack of sleep around here. But now we're getting better. And now we're down to like 2 wakings, like a 12 a.m., a 4 a.m. kind of deal. And that's much better. My problem is when I get her down to sleep, I want to do things. You know,
you're fully awake at that time.
Correct.
Yeah.
I want to do something. I want to watch a silly show. I want to sit down with my husband and watch a movie. I want to put laundry away, whatever it is, or work, do some work. And then, oh, wait, it's 11 o'clock. And then I lay down and the baby's awake, you know, you hear it crying 30 minutes later. So that, I need to work on that. I need to work on going to bed, you know, soon after she goes down, just so I can feel refreshed, because that has been challenging, I will say, to, you know, just be exhausted with 2 kids. That's how I'm doing right now.
Well, it's hard to sometimes balance that, you know, what does self-care look like for you? Is it indulging yourself, or is it giving yourself rest? And sometimes those two things compete with each other.
You're so right.
Yeah. So looking back over everything, is there any advice that you would share to other moms going through your situation?
So specifically related to infertility or
VBAC or anything?
Well, I would say actually in both of those scenarios is I always say to advocate for yourself, because nobody knows you better than you. So I feel like I always say, like, doctors are amazing and they're so knowledgeable. And for the most part, they want what's best for you. They do care, but they cannot possibly know every single rare condition, or they can't be the expert on every single disease. They can't. That's just not possible. Yeah. So you have to research yourself. You have to learn about, like, so I had to learn about premature ovarian failure. Yeah. My OB, I mean, that was not something that was on her radar. I think she told me, and it was my OB I had switched away from. I think she told me she'd seen that one other time in her practice. So did I expect her to be the expert in it? No, not at all. So I wish people would do their own research and advocate for themselves, ask all the questions, ask the provider, like, what do I need to be doing, like, to research? What are some resources that I could use to learn more about this? Or do I need to go to, like, a specialist? Advocating for yourself is huge, and asking questions and not being intimidated to ask questions to your provider, and not being surprised if they aren't the expert in that field. You know, I mean, that's in my case, she hadn't seen that much. She'd seen it one time before in her who knows how many year career. So advocating for yourself and not being afraid to ask questions would be my advice in both scenarios. If you're dealing with infertility, or if you're really trying hard to go for a VBAC.
Yeah. You really, it's important to know what all your options are there. And you're right. Yeah. The doctors don't know everything. That's why there are specialists.
Yes.
Yeah. So one thing I think I forgot to ask you is, after the birth, you have your egg donor. Mm-hmm. How soon did she get to meet the babies? Because you said that she is a part of your life.
Absolutely. She is a very important part of her life. Now, with Channing, our first daughter, I think she met her, maybe 4 months after or so. Her and her husband are world travelers. So they stay busy traveling all the time, which I think is amazing. But yeah, she came to visit, about, I guess, 4 months, whenever Channing was 4 months old. And then she came again, her and her husband both stayed the weekend, I think like a month before I gave birth to Sylvia.
Okay.
My 1-year-old. She has not technically met Sylvia in person yet.
Okay.
We just haven't found a time to, I mean, there's no reason other than just timing. Yeah. They're traveling, we're sick, weddings, birthday, whatever it is. But I talked to her a few weeks ago and said, we've got to come up with a weekend. And she was like, yeah, I might come there, to visit again. So yeah, I mean, she hasn't met Sylvia yet, but she will be an important part of both of their lives. And in whatever capacity they need her or, want to have her in their life, I support it fully.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that we left out that you wanted to add?
Oh, Megan, I'm sure there's all kinds of things that I could that I could add, but I don't think so. I think we covered a lot of it. I'm thrilled to be able to share, that I had a successful VBAC. That's a different angle that I haven't gotten to talk about a lot, and I'm really proud of.
That's awesome. I'm so excited for you that you got what you wanted out of that experience.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time. Please go get some rest.
I know, right? Probably won't. I'll probably be up a little bit longer, but that's okay. All right. Thank you, Megan. Appreciate
thank you so much, Jackie.
All right. See you. Bye.
See you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Normal Birth Podcast. If you have questions, comments, or are interested in being on the show, please send me an email to normalbirthpod@gmail.com.